This is Digital Story Podcast number 888, March 28th, 2023. Today's theme is The Distraction That Is Color. I'm Derek Story. The bulk of my photography is captured in color, but there are those moments when I look at the preview on the back of the camera and think to myself, this just isn't right. In the majority of the time, the problem is the color itself. Sounds crazy? Well, I'll explain myself on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So, here's what's happened the other day. I'm just going to set the scene for you to kind of make my point, or at least the first in a series of points. It was about noon. The sun was high and bright. I had made a stop in Morro Bay and wanted to photograph my cool campsite. The sky was blue with plenty of clouds. There were tall trees in the background. And then there was my campsite itself with my VW ID4 sporting a patio cover coming off the passenger side with a comfy Coleman camp chair and a table there in the shade. Sounds perfect, right? So I pulled out the Fujifilm X100V and mounted the 28mm lens on it to give me just a little bit more elbow room. I took a picture, reviewed it on the LCD, and recoiled. How could such a lovely scene photograph so poorly? Well, the bright midday sun was definitely part of the problem. It added a nasty contrast to the scene. But the real culprit was the overabundance of color. There was just too much of it. My ingenious campsite was lost in a cacophony of blues and greens. The protagonist of my visual story was being consumed by the supporting cast. When I shoot with the X100V, I carry two filters with me, a circular polarizer and a Hoya R72 infrared. So the polarizer was definitely going the wrong direction. That would have just added more color to the situation. It would have made the sky even bluer. Oh my gosh. No, not that one for sure. But the R72 could solve my problem. Because what it could do was, you know, take all that different shades of green foliage and kind of make it, you know, different shades of light white and stuff. And you could take that really intense blue sky and just sort of darken it and make it not black, but, you know, a nice charcoal gray. And then those white clouds would still pop out, but they're, you know, white. And the nice thing about infrared is that it doesn't really affect man-made objects, right? It's more for things that are alive, foliage and skies and stuff like that. But asphalt and concrete and metal and wood, you know, I mean like the picnic bench wood, all of that basically remains unchanged. And that's the story I was trying to tell. You know, photography is about storytelling for me. If I want to tell a story about the campsite, right, that is the story, that's my protagonist, then the campsite needs to jump out at you. It needs to be the first thing that your eye sees. It needs to be the lead. And then all the other stuff is the supporting cast that would support it and say, oh, not only is that a cool campsite, it's in a great location, right? But it goes campsite first, location second. Not location first and what is that? Is that a chair? What do you got over there? Why is that car there? So what I want to do is find a way to tell the story effectively. And I don't really care if I need to switch to black and white or infrared or whatever to tell that story, because the shot that I took was not getting the job done. Now, I don't need every shot that I take that documents something to be a work of art. That's not what I'm shooting for, but I want it to be good. And when I show it to other people, I don't want them to wince or just, you know, pass it by, just like keep swiping like, is there something else interesting here on your phone, right? Don't you hate it when that happens? You show them something on your phone and they spend half a second on it, but they start swiping looking for something else. No, 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 no. Just look at the photo that I showed you. Please don't go looking at everything else on my phone. Okay, and by the way, I'm going to run both of these photos in the show notes. I'll run the color one, and then I'll run the black and white one so that you can really see the difference between the two shots. So how did I capture this black and white shot? It wasn't that difficult. So the first thing that I did, of course, was I put the IR filter on the X100V. You know, it wasn't just that I needed black and white. I needed something that really took that foliage to a different place. And that for me is IR. And black and white IR really does a great job of that. So I put the R72 on the front of the lens, and then I switched to aperture priority and set to F2, because what happens is that R72 filter is really dense. It's a very dense filter. Now, if you put it on a lot of cameras that don't have an electronic viewfinder, it's difficult to work with. With an electronic viewfinder, it's not bad at all. And the X100V is just like fantastic at this kind of stuff. I can compose the shot pretty easily with it. So I put it on there, and then I switch my film simulation mode from a color one that I had to a black and white. And I usually do monochrome plus R for monochrome plus red. That seems to work real well. And then, of course, set the camera into RAW plus JPEG. So I still have, you know, both the RAW and the JPEG, and they are quite different sometimes. In terms of how they're interpreted. The JPEG, as you would expect, comes out more fully baked and often is just ready to use as is. The RAW can lag a little bit behind in terms of first impression, but of course it's a RAW file, so you have a lot more post-processing that you could do with it if you want. So it just sort of depends on, do I need to use it right now and shoot it off to somebody, or am I going to play with it later kind of thing. So after I get the film simulation switched to monochrome plus R, then I just go and shoot away, take the pictures. And when I reviewed that shot on the back of the LCD, I was much, much happier. That was the story that I'm trying to tell. So let's just talk a little bit about the difference between black and white and color, beyond color and black and white, but more into how people respond to it. I have found over the years that there's no problem at all with people seeing black and white shots. I mean, I've never get someone going, where's all the color in the shot? I don't get that. In fact, a lot of times people just look at a black and white shot for me and they just go, they'll talk about the subject or they'll talk about the location, where they won't even talk about that it's black and white. They just roll right into that. There's something in our DNA that just accepts and likes and can relate to black and white images. You know, for years and years and years, of course, that's all we had. And then we did move into color, but black and white has always, always stayed in the fold along with color photography, even to this very day. If you're concerned about switching to black and white, thinking, well, you know, people are going to think that I've gone artsy or something, I wouldn't worry about it, because that has not been my experience at all. People just have rolled right with it, and sometimes even will comment, wow, that's really a nice black and white shot, you know. I mean, they'll appreciate that I actually did it that way. Now, I don't normally switch to black and white unless I have an intent. I mean, sometimes I do get in the mood and say, hey, I just wanted to go shoot black and white today. I'm in a big city or some kind of urban setting, and it just feels like the thing to do. I mean, that does happen. But in my everyday life, I usually don't switch to black and white unless there's some sort of reason. And the reason often is one of two things. Shooting in the middle of the day, right? Shooting in the middle of the day. Black and white and IR excel, color, not so much. And I'm one of those people that I don't want to be limited to photography on the edges of the day. I don't want to have to do all my photography before 9 a.m. in the morning or after 4 p.m. in the afternoon. There's a lot of hours in between those two windows, and I want to be able to take pictures then. And sometimes I don't have a choice, right? Sometimes I am where I am when I am, and I want to be able to capture a good shot. So when you get in the middle part of the day, and now, especially for those of us in North America, that sun is going to be higher and higher and higher, right? Because, you know, we're already in the spring and we're headed towards summer. Midday, summer is black and white country, is infrared country. And it's one of the reasons why I'm bringing it up today, because we're really right in the time of year where this stuff is really super helpful. It's no coincidence that my next two workshops, my next two online workshops, are black and white and infrared, right? We're coming into that time of year. And by the way, those of you who have been either in the online printing workshop in the past or are in the current one, this week we are focusing on the black and white workflow from soup to nuts. We have a guest speaker, and he is going to talk about black and white capture, black and white processing, and black and white printing. It is going to be a blast. And all of our online printing workshop folks, past and present, are invited for this presentation. So, and of course, if you've been in one of our online printing workshops, you have access to the site on Derek Story Online, and you can make your reservation there. But it's a black and white time of year that we're coming into, and it can solve so many problems. So, you know, midday is, you know, definitely one of the situations. The other situation, which is the main topic of this podcast, is when the color just isn't right. Now, sometimes it could be like too much color, like what I was experiencing the other day. It was just so much blue, so much green. My car was blue. The sky was blue. There was all these different shades of green. The green grass, I mean, everything was just like, you know, vibrating with color. And sometimes there's just too much. But another situation with color is when you're in a mixed lighting situation and the color is just off and you cannot for the life of you find a way to correct it. You can't, you're just looking at, you got, you know, daylight coming in through the window, you got fluorescent lights overhead, you've got a tungsten light on in the corner, and you're trying to take a picture of somebody doing something, and you're getting all sorts of weird hues and stuff, and you're just going, oh my God, and you keep trying to correct it, just going nuts. Go ahead and do the best you can and shoot it, but that's a case where you might want to switch to black and white afterwards, because black and white solves all those color shifts. And if you can get away with it, now sometimes if you're having to deliver the picture to a client or to somebody else, then you have to let them know, or you can ask them, is it all right if this shot's in black and white? Does it need to be in color? You know, you got to get that sorted out right away so you know what your options are. But if you have the option to do black and white, or if it's just for you and you have the option to do black and white, boy, that can solve bad color situations. That can solve bad lighting situations. So that is the other scenario. Bad color or too much color or bright midday sun coming from the top. They both scream black and white. Now, I just want to review five things to keep in mind for this kind of photography. The first one is know how to quickly find the black and white setting on your camera. Like on my X100V, one of the function buttons, or the function button, is for the film simulation. So I can just switch from, you know, Velvia to monochrome plus yellow, press the button once, scroll down to the one I want, press it again, and I'm in business. It's very easy to do. And when you know where that is and you can get to it quickly, you're more likely to do it. If you're thinking, oh, I don't know where it is in the menu and I don't feel like digging through it right now, that will be a barrier to you switching to black and white. And now, why would you want to switch to black and white when you can just convert it later? Because if you switch to black and white, then you can compose the image in black and white, and that will make a difference in how you make certain compositional choices. I always think that it's best, you know, ideal, if you can, to shoot in black and white, and then that way you can compose in black and white. you shoot RAW plus JPEG, this is the second point, then you have all of your options open. So JPEG will be black and white. Depending on your camera, that RAW file will either be black and white or color. But it's a RAW file, which means you can do anything that you want in case you're not happy with the black and white JPEG. When I shoot in black and white, I'm always in RAW plus JPEG. Another thing to do is test your camera's IR sensitivity. And you can do this with an IR remote control. And you just put your camera in live view and you point the IR remote controller at the front of the camera and press a button, you know, whatever, channel changer button, power button, whatever, something to make the IR sensor go off. If you can see the dot from the remote control on the live view LCD screen, then your camera has sensitivity to infrared and you're in business. So then all you need to do is get the Hoya R72 IR filter. Off to the races you go. And like I said, I carry two filters with the X100V. I carry a polarizer and the R72 that covers basically everything that I need to do. Also, don't be afraid to shoot midday. You know, don't be stuck as one of those photographers on the edges of the day. Shoot any time of day that you want and just be prepared to shoot in bad lighting, because bad lighting can yield very good pictures if you make a few adjustments. Black and white and IR are two of those key adjustments you can make to get very good shots in midday lighting. So don't be afraid to shoot midday. Shoot any time of day that you want, and then just use your skill set to adapt your settings to get the best shot for the situation that you're in. I would recommend also doing a little practice seeing in IR, black and white IR, to understand how it affects and doesn't affect certain objects. In the case of the campsite shot, the reason why it worked is it didn't really affect the car or the canopy or the bench or the bike or any of those things that I wanted to show off. So those kind of stayed nice and kind of bold and dark. And then everything else, like all that foliage that was driving me nuts before, all turned light. So now I had contrast of the man-made materials against the lighter foliage. And then I had this lovely dark sky with poofy clouds above. Turned out fantastic. But, you know, I knew what was going to happen when I put that filter on. I knew what was going to happen. And it helps knowing what's going to happen, you know, because it's not that big a deal to pull the filter out of your pocket, put it on the camera. But it's even less of a hassle if you know what you're going to get when you do it, if you know what I'm saying. And so I say, well, let me try this and see what happens. And well, then again, that might be a barrier to you actually trying. Those are the points that I want to remind you of. If you get all this down, then you are equipped to shoot any time of day in any kind of lighting, no matter how harsh it is. And I tell you, those black and white shots or IR shots from the midday are just fantastic sometimes. I just love them. I'm not hesitant to switch to that if the situation calls for it. And I'm generally quite pleased with the outcome when I do. Chris Nichols and Jordan Drake joined Petapixel to lead its YouTube channel. And you can read this entire article on petapixel.com. I'm going to read you a little bit of it, and then I'll comment on what's going on here after that. Chris Nichols and Jordan Drake are joining Petapixel and will lead its new YouTube channel. The two have been a mainstay in the photography industry for more than a decade as hosts for The First Camera Show and then DP Review. Their current home at DP Review is shutting down, but the two have no intention of stopping their excellent video reviews and photography-based content, as they will be joining Petapixel as the faces of its new YouTube channel launching in May, providing a nearly seamless transition from their previous home to their new one. Quote, I'm thrilled that Petapixel's not only given us the opportunity to keep our photography YouTube show going, but also the chance to make some fun changes to our format in upcoming episodes, Drake says. Sure, we will be releasing reviews for the latest photo/video gear shot in the frozen lands of Canada, but we're already working on field tests and episodes that are bigger than anything we've done before. This is a big move, but it's one that I'm very excited about. Working with Petapixel brings me back to the reason I got into the industry in the first place, a deep love for photography. End quote. Petapixel is ecstatic to be able to provide the two with a place to continue to share their professional insight and recommendations with a community that has appreciated them for the better part of 15 years. I'm really happy to hear this, that they are moving over to Petapixel and that they are going to continue their work. So for those of you that haven't heard, which would surprise me because not only have I written about it, but practically everyone else in the photo world has written about it as well. DP Review, the website, is shutting down. It's closing down in April. I mean, like, boom, like very, very soon. And it's because Amazon owns it. Amazon is cutting way back. They're doing big layoffs. And DP Review just becomes collateral damage, which to me is insane. It is insane. This is not, this is not a small thing. This is probably the best respected photography site online, DP Review, and just casually shutting them down, to me, seems almost irresponsible. Personal opinion there. But seriously, find another place for it. Do something with it. Sell it. I don't know. Figure it out, right? You're the caretaker of this. Do something that seems appropriate instead of just shutting it down and saying that then for a small period of time, it's going to be read-only, and then after that, who knows what's going to happen. There are three areas that most of us depend on with DP Review. The first one is the videos done by Chris and Jordan, all right? Big part of DP Review. Well, fortunately, they are moving over to Petapixel, so that's going to keep going. The second part are the quote-unquote unbiased camera reviews, and I put it in quotes because it can't be totally unbiased, but they have a methodology that has been very effective over many years, and we are going to miss those reviews because they are sort of the stake in the ground with a particular camera or lens. We can form our own opinions from there, but we can compare what they say about this to this to this and have some feel for some consistency in how they test the different items. That is going away, and if they bury the archives, all that work that has been done over the years may go away as well. I hope that doesn't happen. And then the third are the forums. And, you know, the forums are crazy, right? I don't go to the forums very much, but there is a lot of useful information in the forums. And I'm surprised at how many times when I'm doing a Google search to find out something photography related, that one of the options for an answer is in a forum post on DP Review. So even though I don't hang out in the forums, there is a wealth of information in there. Those are probably most certainly going away, never to be seen again. So this is a huge loss for the photography community. The one thing that we can hang on to is that at least Chris and Jordan are going to continue their work, which is excellent. I think the fit with Petapixel is very good, and I'm very excited about that. And then we'll just have to see what happens with everything else. How to choose binoculars. We review the OM System Olympus 10x42 Pro. And this review is on fstoppers.com. I have a link in the show notes. I want to read you just a little bit because of the time of year we're coming into. Binoculars are sometimes an overlooked accessory that comes in very handy when you're working out in the field. And if you haven't upgraded your binoculars for a while, they have changed a lot. They have changed a lot for the better too. I'm gonna read you a little bit about this. A good pair of binoculars are often invaluable to photographers. There are many important things to learn about buying them. Here's what led me to the OM System Olympus Pro binoculars, why they are my perfect choice, and why my old ones were a mistake. My binoculars were showing their age. I bought them around 20 years ago, shortly before I moved to Tanzania. They were small, light, and easy to carry around, which I needed back then, but they had shortcomings. I know now I made the wrong decision when I bought them. The old Steiners were 10x26. The first number refers to the magnification, and the second is the diameter of the objective lens. Back then, I found the 10x magnification was more than I needed for the large animals I saw in Africa, and I could often not fit the entire creature in the frame. The second number refers to the objective lens size. 26 millimeters is small, so the light transmission through them was not great. Think of a camera with a small aperture. In the bright light of the savanna, the smaller objective lens was less of an issue. However, here in often cloudy and dull North England where I live now, it is. Furthermore, I am no spring chicken. Their low light gathering capacity meant that although I see things 10 times bigger, the image was often dull and lacking detail, and I gained little from using them. Everyone's vision gradually deteriorates with age, and a dark image isn't what I need. These are good points. And, you know, I'm reading the first part of the article here because, I mean, I can tell you right now, he likes the binoculars, and there's a lot of detail about why he likes them that you can see in the article. But this whole idea about, you know, the objective lens is a very important one. And if you haven't spent much time thinking about binoculars, I don't think the magnification is as important as the diameter of the objective lens. 10 is usually plenty for everyone, but you know, having the difference between 26 millimeter, which is what he had before, and 42 is a big difference, especially with the coatings that OM System puts on their lenses and all that kind of stuff, that light transmission gets even better. OM System produces three grades of binoculars: compact, standard, and pro. Still sold with the Olympus branding. I went for the Pro version mainly for its increased clarity of image, durability, and because they are waterproof. So before buying, I tried a pair of mid-size Olympus System 10x by 42 Pro binoculars. On unpacking them, I found the binoculars very pleasant to hold. The rubberized grip was warm to the touch. The focusing ring was large and easy to reach with my forefinger and thumb. The action was smooth and just the right amount of resistance to focus quickly and accurately. Many pairs I tried over the years are either too tight and jerk when you start to turn them. Others are too loose, but not these. They fit in the Goldilocks zone. I knew he was going to say that. And he goes on to talk about, you know, more aspects of the binoculars, what he liked about them. And then he goes, these are high-quality professional instruments. The huge difference I noticed using these binoculars compared to anything else I had used before is their brightness. I tried this pair and my old binoculars side by side and watched cormorants on the water and flying. With the Olympus binoculars, I could see the details in the shadows that were not visible with the smaller, older ones. Furthermore, those old Steiners seemed to put a slightly muddy cast, whereas the Olympus were crystal clear. So like I said, there's more detail about these binoculars in the entire article. If you're curious, the Olympus binoculars sell for $499. Not cheap, but when you compare them to some of the other binoculars he's talking about, they're about half the price. And you can spend a lot of money on binoculars. So anyway, if you were thinking about binoculars, or even if you weren't thinking about binoculars, but now that I brought it up, you're thinking, maybe that would be useful for me, doing a little spotting, seeing what's going on, all that kind of stuff. These are worth taking a look at. A pretty good review on F-Stoppers. Link in the show notes. Okay, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. I want to start with a thank you to the folks who have donated film cameras over the last month or two. This has just been terrific. And the reason why it's top of mind is I sent a few out the door today. And the folks that are receiving these are very excited about it. They're going to be using these cameras. And all of the cameras I sent out today were donated. You know, they got the donation kit. They wrote me. They got the donation kit. I sent them the stuff. They packed the box, put the prepaid label on, shipped them back to me. I worked on the cameras, got them cleaned up, got them ready to go, put them in the camera shop. And now folks are thrilled to have them, and they're going to put them to use. And in every case on the cameras that went out today, they weren't being used. Now they're going to be. And I just think it's such a cool thing. It helps support the podcast. It gets quality cameras at a reasonable price to people who are going to use them. And unlike some other sites, you know, where you're not sure what you're going to get, all the folks that come to the Film Camera Shop are assured that they're going to get something that is quality and functioning and clean and ready to go. And that is a big difference. The folks who have donated cameras are really the engine of what makes this all go. And I just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you who have donated. And if you're interested in donating, then you can just go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on the contact form, and you'll see right there, you know, I have a film camera I want to donate. You know, there'll be a couple little boxes to check, and then I'll get back to you, and we can get a donation kit out to you if it's something that I can use in the store. This is just a really cool project. It has been for quite a while now and just keeps going. I want to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this podcast month in and month out, support our entire community. They have their own page on both Derek Story Online and then also on our Patreon site. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member and supporting the show and reaping the benefits of Inner Circle membership, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. You can check things out, and hopefully you will become a supporter in 2023. And a big thanks to those who are supporting us now. And finally, I'd like to thank our friends at Red River Paper for supporting the show, for being a sponsor. They're the ones that helped us get this black and white photography presentation together this Wednesday for the online class. I went to Drew and I said, Drew, I need somebody that really knows this stuff inside and out. Can you help me? He recommended a guest speaker, made the connection. And the next thing you know, we have this great presentation happening on Wednesday, thanks to Drew and the folks at Red River Paper. This is what sponsorship really means to us. It's full involvement in what we're doing. Red River Paper is there. If you need quality printing paper, if you need information about inkjet printing, whatever you need related to it, they can probably help you. They have a tile on all the pages of Digital Story, and they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. A huge thanks to them for supporting this show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed our podcast. I'm working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, take your camera, no matter what time of day it is, go get some pictures, and then come back and see me next Tuesday. Until then, bye-bye now.